My name is Billy Horn. I am 12 years old. Today is June 30th, and I'm speaking with Brother Doug Hoy, who is my friend from church. We are recording this interview in Peterborough, New Hampshire. What are the most important lessons you have learned in life?
So I think the most important lessons I have learned, which a lot of people probably need to learn too, is that to never give up, to always keep trying on stuff. I think you find in your life, because I found it in mine, you're going to have a lot of times when you feel like you can't get something done, you can't get anything to go right for you. But I've learned through faith that you just keep going. So we have a story in our family that we call it the Hoy Luck. So whenever we have something come down that's going to go bad, or we want something to happen a certain way and it's not happening, every time if it's something we really should have, every time we go through struggles and struggles, and then it works out somehow. And usually it works out in a way you never really expected it would work out. So always keep trying.
So persevere.
Persevere, that's a good way to put it.
Are there any funny stories your family tells about you that come to mind?
Yeah, there's one funny story. So I was probably 4 or 5 years old. I was old enough to bite food. And we went out and picked apples in the apple orchard for the day. Have you ever seen a Volkswagen bus? An old
kind of
minivan kind of thing, or van kind of. So we're riding back in the back of this thing, and my brother is a year and a half older than I was, so he's old enough. This is before seat belts and car seats. He was old enough, and he was crawling around the back seat, and we had this big bushel full of apples. And by the time we got home, he had taken every apple from that bushel and thrown it into me, and I took one little tiny baby bite out of it and then threw it back out to him, and we had gone through every single apple in the bushel. So my mom and dad were not very happy. So we made a lot of applesauce. Yep, I guess I like apples.
Probably, that's a good thing to like.
Mm-hmm.
What are the most important... Oh, wait. There's already that one on, okay. The other one. And what is your favorite memory of me?
My favorite memory of you, Billy, I think was when that first primary class you were in, you were kind of quiet, kind of didn't talk an awful lot, and then I think at some point... You told a joke and I laughed at it. I think usually you might have got in trouble for a joke, but I have kind of the same sense of humor that you have. So then you started laughing, and I think ever since then you and I have been buddies. So that's my favorite memory of you.
Yeah.
I don't remember the joke even, but I remember you.
I don't remember half the jokes I say. Right. I just remember the ones that don't make any sense, like, I got my crowbar.
Well, you have a lot of jokes. Keep doing that.
Yeah, I do have a lot of jokes. It's like the weirdest thing. Are there any funny... Oh, wait. Okay, we've already asked that one. For your great-great-grandchildren listening to this years from now, is there any wisdom you'd want to pass to them?
Yeah, the wisdom I would pass to them is the one that I struggled with, and that's believe in God. It took me a while to figure that out, a long time, and I probably wasted a lot of time being otherwise. So for my grandchildren, for you, for anybody who wants to hear it, God's there. All you gotta do is find him. For some of us, it's a little harder than others. But don't be frustrated that you don't find him right away. Don't be frustrated that he doesn't answer you, like come down and talk to you. Just keep trying. Same thing. Persevere. He's there.
Okay. That was inspiring. When and where were you born?
I was born in a place called Crawfordsville, Indiana, on April 25th of 1970. And I don't remember much about Indiana because we moved a lot after that. But that's where I was born.
Okay, and where did you grow up?
So after about a year in Indiana, before I remember anything, we moved to New York, upstate New York, in a town called, or city called Binghamton, New York. We lived there for probably 5 or 6 years, and then we moved a couple towns over to a town called Endicott, New York. So, and that was, lived there until I was probably 11 years old, and then we moved up to Old Orchard Beach, Maine. I lived there for about 2 years and then moved to Brunswick, Maine, and lived there until I became an adult and moved out. And I kind of lived around the Bass Brunswick area for a while before I joined the Air Force. So I kind of lived a lot of places.
Well, what happened in your Air Force time?
In the Air Force? Well, let's see. So in around 1990, I think I was working for my parents. They owned a carpet store, and the economy was kind of falling apart then. We weren't a lot of jobs available. So the carpet store went out of business, so I went to work and started doing janitorial, cleaning toilets and stuff overnight, and I realized I didn't like that very much.
Yeah, I can see why.
Yeah, it's work anyway. It makes money, but I didn't like it. So I said, well, I got to find something else. So I decided that I would go join the Air Force and let them teach me how to do something, let me see some of the world. So I went down to Lackland Air Force Base in Texas. That's where everybody goes for basic training in the Air Force. Spent 6 weeks there. And then I went and learned how to become a satellite communications technician. And I learned that in Biloxi, Mississippi, where I was for about 7 months to learn that. And then from Biloxi, which was a good assignment, we had a beach right across the street. You can't beat that.
Ooh,
from Biloxi, I went to Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. And I worked for what's called the Mobile Radar Squadron. So we provide satellite communications. We'd take a field, like the field out the back of the church here. And in about 20 hours, we could put all the equipment and make it a satellite and radar facility so we could track aircraft and provide communications back to wherever, back to Washington or whoever needed it.
That is quite quick for satellite to
Go to learn how to do that, you mean?
No, like to put it up that fast.
It is. Yeah, it's all mobile equipment. I don't know. I'm sure they still have some of it around, but it was all on big 2.5 and 5 ton trucks. And we'd roll them into the back of an airplane. The airplane would take us wherever in the world we needed to go. We pulled off, and within, you know, 20 hours after getting it off that truck and getting onto the site, we would have it set up. We'd still have more to do after that, but at least we'd have the link up, you know, the satellite link would be up, and the radar would be spinning, and that's what we do the most. You know, that was the most important thing. So I did that there for 2 years. I met Michelle, Sister Hoy. We got married not too long after that, and then we got stationed in Okinawa, Japan, which was really cool. We actually got married a little faster because she got an assignment to Okinawa. And if we got married, we could stay together. And I was going to ask her anyway, so I said, well, I guess I better ask her now, because otherwise she'll be halfway around the world. So we went and we were stationed in Okinawa. I did another mobile radar squadron there, too. They're called Air Control Squadrons. And then in Okinawa, we had a great time going out to snorkeling around the island. It's a beautiful island. If you ever get a chance to go to Okinawa, Japan, it's pretty fun. Did a lot of snorkeling there. We did a lot of visiting to Korea to go buy some jackets and stuff, and just to see the towns and places around Korea, which you're kind of familiar with now, with your brother being there.
Yeah, more
I love,
like
I love hearing from him because it brings back some memories.
I know a lot about Seoul and around Seoul.
Around that area. Well, that's where we went most of the time, was there. And then from Okinawa, we got stationed up in Alaska, Anchorage, Alaska. So while we were there, we did a whole bunch of driving around a huge state, a lot of wilderness, a lot of camping, a lot of good times there.
A lot of cold.
It's a lot of cold in the winter. It's warm in the summer, but in the winter it got cold.
Yeah.
The coldest we saw was 50 degrees below zero. That was cold.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that's where Donovan was born. And Donovan, I can kind of blend this into where I share my testimony here. So Donovan was, you know, Sister Hoy was pregnant with Donovan. She had a ton of complications going through her pregnancy. And I had seen the missionaries. They had come visited us. I had taken some lessons, but I wasn't there yet. I didn't have that faith. I didn't really know. I didn't have that answer yet, right? So, and I was kind of looking for it. Well, Michelle kept getting sick, and I would go. She worked in the hospital on the base. So she would call me. She called me one time and said, you need to bring some food over because they're going to admit me to the hospital, and the hospital food in Air Force bases is not usually very good. So I brought her over peanut butter sandwich and some milk. And when I showed up, the nurse midwife pulled me outside and said, we need to talk first. I said, okay. So she said, tonight, you might lose your son and you might lose your wife. And you can't tell them you know this. You can't tell her you know this. So, I mean, you can see it now. It still affects me having heard that. So I said, so you're telling me I got to go in and lie to my wife, who knows every time I lie and can tell everything. You have a mother, right? Does she know whenever you lie?
It kind of does, right? It's like she has a sixth sense.
They do. Women know these things. So I said, how am I going to do that? She said, well, whatever you've got to do. She can't know because her blood pressure goes up. If that goes up, that's bad news. So I called my mother, cried on the phone for a couple minutes, went and washed my face up, said, all right, I'm going to go in, and I'm going to lie to my wife because the doctor told me I have to. So I went in, and I said, you know, hi, honey, how you doing? I have some food. So she said, what's going on? And I said, well, you know, I don't really know. And that's as long as that lie lasted, because she looked at me and said, okay, so what's really going on? So I looked, and the nurse midwife who had told me to lie looked at me and said, nice job. So, well, she knows me. So anyway, Michelle said, I told her kind of, you know, briefly what was going on, because I don't know much about medical anyway, thank God. So she told me, call the missionaries. So here's where Doug's testimony begins. I called the missionaries because I said, you know what? I visited missionaries. They're good people. She said, they can give me a blessing. I said, well, you know, maybe this is where I'm going to find out about this stuff. I said, okay. So we called the missionaries, and they told us we're taking Michelle downtown to another hospital because the Air Force couldn't handle it. A birth, it was 2 months early for Donovan. So we went down to, it's called the NICU, which is where you go to have babies that early. And they said the only chance of either of them or both of them surviving was to have the baby then. So we went down, did some struggles. My mother was trying to come up. She was supposed to be there for the birth. 22 hours later, my mother came walking in the door. My friend went and picked her up at the airport. And 15 minutes later, Diamond came into this world. And part of that birth was, when you go and see a birth, usually you have training and you're kind of ready for a birth. I hadn't had the training yet because it was 2 months too early. So Michelle was doing something at one point, and the nurse said, do something that I don't remember what it was. And I looked at her because I didn't know what that was. And she said, haven't you had your training? And I looked at her and said, it's scheduled for next week. So she kind of laughed and said, oh, okay. So anyway, we had the baby. There were things that I wasn't ready for after a baby. So I kind of was getting a little bit lightheaded. But out came Donovan. He cried. They showed him to mom, but then they had to take him into the NICU and put him on support for his lungs and that sort of thing. So she got about 2 seconds to look at him, and off he went. So then we spent 5 weeks with Donovan in the NICU. We had to go down and visit him. You had to wash your hands like 5 minutes before you could go see him. But we spent every minute we could down there. And I remember thinking, okay, so I asked God to make sure they stayed alive, and they did. So I said, okay, so that's one check mark for God, right? Okay, that worked. So while we were in the hospital, they took Donovan in, and they do all kinds of tests on kids that are born that early. And they came to us, and they said, your son has what's called an intracranial bleed, which means inside of your head, you're bleeding. So we said, that was the look on my face. I said, what do we do about that? They said, there's nothing you can do. You have to let it run its course and see what happens. And they told us this is a pretty severe one, so he's going to have spots in his brain where his brain won't develop because there's blood there where there should be brain developing. So they said he'll have all kinds of, could have all kinds of learning disabilities. He may never be able to move out of the house, which, and can you imagine hearing that for your first child? It's not a good thing to hear, right? So Sister Hoy looked at me right there and said, let's call the missionaries again. I said, you know what? It worked the last time. Let's call them again. So the missionaries came. They gave Michelle a blessing. They gave me a blessing. They gave Donovan a blessing. And again, I wasn't a member yet, right? Sister Hoy was, but I wasn't yet. So 2.5 months later, 3 months later, something like that, they called us back in again and said, okay, it's time for him to get another MRI, pictures of his brain, to find out how bad the damage is, how much it left behind, and what we're going to have to do, what kind of support he'll have to get. So we went in after the MRI was taken. We're sitting in the doctor's office, just me and Sister Hoy. And the doctor walked in, and he drops some papers on the table, and he sits down, and he looked at us, and he goes, I don't know what to tell you. Of course, both of us are going, I don't want to hear that. And he said, well, no, this is a good thing. I don't know how to tell you. He said, that MRI, he goes, here's the pictures right here. He goes, those are the pictures of a perfectly normal brain. And he said, with bleeding in your head, that's impossible. And so we said, well, are you sure they're the right ones? And he said, I've checked it 4 and 5 times. There's no way it's the wrong ones. Every protocol was followed. That's your son's brain, and I can't tell you why it's perfect. So guess what I said? I can. Nope, I said, I can tell you why it's perfect, because I asked God.
And it worked.
And it worked. And it makes me cry every time we tell that story. But that's where I want to tell you, thank you, that's where when I tell you, believe in God. So there's my story. Be careful what you ask for, right? I asked for him to prove me he was there, and I think he did. So, and ever since then, I've believed in God. So there's easier ways to learn that story, man. But that's my conversion story. And that was all up in Alaska. So that was the end. And after Alaska, we got out of the Air Force, drove down to Mexico, came up through St. Louis to visit her family, and then I started doing what I'm doing now, which is working on semiconductor equipment. So, up to you. You got another question?
That was a very long question that actually covered too.
Right, okay.
In your time as an Air Force, you said that you've been a lot of places.
Yep.
And what happens to be your favorite place that you visited?
Oh, that's a hard one, because there's two cool places. So we were stationed in Japan, and we visited quite often a place called Maida Flats. And Maida Flats is a place you can go take your snorkel gear and go snorkeling around the outside of the reef, the island. It's really cool, because you go and you walk through this really long, kind of shallow water to get out to where it drops off. And then you put your fins on and stuff and you go swimming. We've seen all kinds of tropical fish and barracuda. Never did see a shark out there, but I had a...
That's strange.
It's a little... Yeah, I had a barracuda swim up and look right at me. You ever seen a barracuda?
It's like a tiny shark.
They're a little scary looking, right? So he just came swimming up. He looked at me, and I looked at him, and I was pretty thankful when he went the other way.
He's just like...
Uh-oh.
He's like, I see a fish.
Those are big teeth.
Goodbye.
Yeah. So that was a fun place, and then we went to a place in Alaska called the Brooks Mountain Range. And that's where when you drive from Fairbanks and you go north towards Prudhoe Bay, where all the oil fields are, there's this Brooks Mountains called, and there's a pass you go through called Adigan Pass. And it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. There's just a road and a pipeline for oil and tundra and mountains. So that was a pretty cool place. We're driving up the road, and we got stopped by caribou, and then we had to sit there and wait in our car while 1,000 caribou went by.
Probably about 1,000.
Yeah,
I mean, an average caribou pack is about 100 to, like, 90 to, like, 100 to,
yeah,
120.
This was a big herd up there. There's nothing else up there. So there were just caribou after caribou. Maybe it wasn't that many. Maybe it seemed like that many because they weren't going very fast.
They were just going.
And at one point, I honked my horn, and they would just kind of look at you. And then they would just keep doing whatever they were doing because they didn't care.
She's like, huh?
Nope,
really?
We're waiting, yeah. So that was a really cool place. If you ever get a chance to go to Alaska, it's a cool place.
The best way to scare a caribou out of your way is to take a pistol and just shoot it up.
Didn't have one. So we were stuck waiting. We tried honking the horn, thinking maybe that would work. We revved the engine up, thinking that would work. The caribou were going to go however fast they want to go, which was not very fast that day.
Okay, if you shoot again, make sure you're shooting it with an angle so it doesn't come back down.
Right, yep. Didn't have one, so.
Because if you just shoot it up, just like waiting there, it's going,
yeah, they don't like you shooting guns around an oil pipeline either, so a little bit dangerous.
So just get like a quarter gun shy and just go.
Right.
It wasn't a gun, it was a megaphone.
Right. All right, on to the next question. Or do you have any different questions?
So, what was it like growing up in all those places?
All those places? I had a good childhood. I had a brother who's a year and a half older than me to the day. He's October 25th, I was April 25th, so we're exactly a year and a half apart. So being the younger brother, I was used for a lot of experiments, like what happens when you put your younger brother in a cart full of pillows and roll him down a hill? Yeah, that kind of stuff. But we still had fun. A lot of firecrackers, a lot of just stuff that you can't do as much anymore today, but it was fun.
Firecrackers.
Yep.
Why did somebody have to, like, I don't know, throw them at each other?
Okay, I would say we probably did some of that too. But we did a lot of hiking in the going into the woods. We had dirt bikes and we'd go out, and not motorized ones, but just dirt bikes. We'd make a trail and there was a stream around us, we made a ramp to jump over that.
Dirt bikes, like
pedaling.
Yeah.
Right.
It's kind of like a bicycle, but with like special tires.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we did a lot of jumping, a lot of wrecking bikes, a lot of fixing bikes, a lot of swimming in quarries, just a lot of good fun things. So my childhood was good.
Isn't a quarry like a stone place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had a friend of mine's house was right near a quarry where they were taking. This would have been asleep. I'm not sure what it was, but it had this, well, of course, we probably weren't supposed to be in it, but they had these trails that would go down to the water because they would drag stuff up out of the water. So we would ride our bikes down these trails, and they curved around, and then you'd put a little ramp at the end and jump off into the quarry and hold onto your bike because if it went down into the water, you'd probably never get it back again because it's pretty deep. So we used to go jump into that thing and bring our bikes back out and swim in that for a while. I guess they probably weren't supposed to be there. It was a different world then. We weren't doing anything bad. We were just swimming.
Well, technically, you were riding your bikes into a pond.
Right, yeah. Yep, but they were clean bikes, right, because we put them in the water all the time.
So, like, your parents come home and you're like, tell me what's your bike. I'll be back in, like, 3 hours.
We went through a lot of tires. When you do jumps and land on rocks, it can bend tires pretty good. We had a lot of
look!
Fun, so.
My tire is turned into a U. Is that okay?
It's a different world. Kids were outside a lot more then. Nowadays, you don't see as much kids outside. There's a lot more inside stuff, which is too bad. I think when you guys are inside too much, you're missing a lot of good stuff out there.
Every morning, I kind of get up and I, like, there's sun on my face. Or, well, that happens in summer and winter. And I'm like, Do I have to get up right now?
Well, yeah. That's a pretty normal thing your age. That was the same when we were kids. You didn't want to get up early, and then you didn't want to go to bed early. And your mom was saying, it's time to go to bed now. And you didn't want to go to bed, or it's time to come inside was a big thing with us. The lights would go out. It would get dark. I mean, the street lights would come on. You know, it was maybe an hour later, you'd hear all the mothers or fathers yelling for the kids. And all of us were trying to hide, and there's no way, because they know right where you are. So eventually, there'd be one or two of the parents would come up and say, okay, everybody, it's time to go home. So we got dragged in all the time to go home in the summertime. Yep.
So, do you know what would help with that?
Do I know what?
Do you know what would help with hiding? A big gray blanket and just put it over yourself so it looks like a giant rock.
We tried leaves, we tried everything, but parents know how to find their kids because they know what you like to do, so they know where to look for you usually. And we weren't bad kids. About the third time they'd call, we'd say, all right, probably better go in because otherwise we're going to be in trouble anyway. So. And if you get too much trouble, then you can't go out the next day. You don't want that to happen.
That's never fun.
Right.
Who were your parents?
My parents, who are since divorced, but they were, well, they are, Don Hoy and Brenda Hoy, who is now Brenda Means. And they met when they were going to college in New Jersey. He's from Indiana. She was from New Jersey. They ended up getting married. They had my brother, who's Nathan. And then they, a year and a half later, had me. And then we just moved from one place to another. My dad was a carpet salesman, he was a carpet store manager. My mom mostly stayed home. She did a lot of work for volunteer work, which she still does. She volunteers for schools and what's the company? There's an organization that takes care of people that are dying, that aren't going to live. So they go kind of help them ease themselves at the end. She does a lot of that stuff. So I think I learned from her to, and from him too, to kind of volunteer and do things. Help people out.
What were your parents like?
They were very loving. I know we had, I guess I thought they were perfect, but none of us are perfect, so I guess they had some shortcomings that I didn't see. And they ended up growing kind of different from each other. It's funny, my dad turned into kind of a liberal person, my mom turned into a really conservative person. So after a while, that didn't work so well for them. But they got a divorce, and I've never seen people get a divorce and still be friends as much as they were. So it's kind of cool to show you, even if you're going to not get along with somebody and you have to go different ways, you don't have to hate them, right? You can just go your different ways. So, but my dad was always, you know, I remember we did a lot of camping. We did a lot of going out in the woods and hiking even with him and my mom. So it was a good childhood. It's good to have a mom and a dad around, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're in trouble.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
How was your relationship with your parents?
That was a really good relationship. I remember that I had friends when we would get a little bit older, 12, 13, 14, when they didn't want to talk to the parents. They didn't want to tell their parents something. And I never had that problem. I said, well, I can tell my parents pretty much anything. Although, I guess one time I could share a story with you that was probably a good thing that happened to me. We're probably 9 or 10 years old, maybe 11. And a friend of mine stole a cigarette from his dad's thing of cigarettes. So he came out with us in the woods and he said, we're going to smoke a cigarette. And we all thought, oh, how cool does that sound, right? We're going to be like adults, because a lot of people smoked back then. We're going to be like adults, we're going to smoke a cigarette. Well, they passed that cigarette around and it got to me. And I took one puff off of that cigarette and I probably turned green. And I started to cough and I almost threw up. And guess what the last time I touched a cigarette was that day. I haven't touched one ever since then. So, but my mom and dad were always open to talking. They always wanted to make sure that I knew they could come to them with any problems that I had. And that's very comforting to know, and that's what I try to do with my kids. I want to make sure they know that I'm there no matter what they do. You know, just like how Jesus is for us. The same idea. You want to love them anyway. So. And kids are going to make mistakes, so you kind of got to know that. And they did. So.
Did your brother and yourself do, like, any fun activities?
What did we do? We used to do some stuff. We had a little BB gun, little Daisy BB gun we go out and play with.
Is it
a pump action one.
Oh, yeah.
So, and it was so beat up, you'd have to pump it a bunch of extra times because the little air cylinder thing was kind of leaking a little bit, I'm sure. But we'd go out and we'd still have a good time. We had fun shotgun shells out in the woods. We'd line them up on fences and then shoot them off the fence. One time he climbed up on top of the shed and I said, well, what if you throw the shotgun shell up in the air and then I'll shoot it out of the air? And I shot him right in the forehead.
Uh-oh.
Thankfully, there wasn't much power, just left a big red mark on his forehead. But I hit him, and he fell down, and then rolled off the back of the shed into the leaves. And I went, uh-oh, I killed my brother.
And we're like, ouch.
I ran out, he got up, and he goes, why did you do that? I said, I didn't mean to, I was trying to hit the thing, and I was tracking it down, and I shot you right in the head, so. So, I guess we got lucky, I didn't shoot him in the eye anyway. So we did fun stuff like that, like brothers are supposed to, right?
Did your brother do anything to piss you off a lot?
Well, he's my brother, so I'm sure he did. I don't remember a lot of that, though. You know, I was in a car accident when I was 21 years old. And it was a pretty bad car accident, and I lost like 6 pints of blood, and I almost died from it. And a lot of the memories that I have from before that are not the greatest memories. I hit my head pretty hard, and like I say, I lost a lot of blood, and they had to rush me into the hospital. So a lot of things that happened before that, I kind of lost some of those memories. Not lost them, but they're a little bit more vague than they were. I should have done one of these interviews before that car accident, I guess.
Probably. However, you probably didn't know about it.
Nope. We're coming back from a ski trip and got in a head-on collision with another car, so. Oops.
I chihuahua.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Drive careful on the ice, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, did you ever do something weird with your bike, kind of? Like, you tried to put, like, wings on it or make it go faster?
Well, we used to, when we were kids, we always put playing cards on them. Have you done that with the bike? You put them on the back so it goes into the spokes, and when you ride, it makes a kind of noise. So we used to put 4, 5, or 6 of those on there. We tried different things like that. I'm trying to think of the make it go faster. We had a friend who had a little electric motor, and we spent hours and hours trying to get that thing hooked up to the bike so it could actually spin the tires on the bike for us. And we got to work a little bit, but most of the time it was just slipping. You know, you'd have it spinning on the tires, and it would kind of slip and wouldn't really help very much. But we had fun. We had fun trying to do it anyways.
So, every single story I've heard from this, something happens with their bike.
Mm-hmm.
And every single time, I just want to get giant propellers and just make, like, kind of glide wings.
Make your bike fly.
So, go. Going down my hill, go up a ramp, and I hit the motor, and it goes, spins back to you, and the thing starts spinning.
Mm-hmm. Nope, I never did anything that cool. I made it fly by jumping off of jumps, is what I did. So, you go down the hill, get enough speed, and put enough of a ramp, you can go pretty good. Unfortunately, sometimes you don't land very good. I went one time up in the air, and my front tire fell off up in the air.
Ouch.
Yeah, that makes it. I tried to land on the back, and then the forks went right down into the dirt, and I probably rolled 20 times past the bike, so. But I lived, right? You get up, and you go, wow, that was pretty crazy.
You get up, and you're like,
better not do that again.
I chihuahua. You get up, you look down, and you're like, well, I need to go inside.
Right. I got skinned up knee and my elbows all skinned up.
So kind of like this was a couple of weeks ago.
And you go back in, and back then your mother would just look at you and, what did you do?
I fell.
I tried to jump my bike and I fell off. Okay, well come on in, let's get you taken care of.
I tried to play.
You
off,
and
they
put you
back
out there again. Yep.
I was playing with my bike. Okay. Right. Nowadays it's like, what happened?
Right. It's good to go out and skin your knee sometimes. You got to do something, right? You got to learn that it hurts to do some things, but you got to try them anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. My bike was broken for the longest time. Like,
yeah.
The chain came off and the tires got crooked, and no matter how much I tried, it would always turn a little bit to the left.
Right. Oh, so the handlebars weren't quite right? Or...
Well, no, like, the tire on the front was a little bit crooked.
Right.
So it kind of skidded.
Right, right.
So I would be pushing and pushing and leaning, and it would just go the other direction, just like, come on, other way.
So did you keep trying? Did you keep working on it? Because that's all you can do, right? Keep working.
And I couldn't put my
seatbelt
on.
Some questions.
So I asked my uncle who works on bikes, and yeah, he fixed it.
Cool.
And he put a bell on it, which was awesome. What did you think your life would be like when you were older?
When I was at a young age?
Yeah.
That's actually, when I was young, I enjoyed doing math a lot.
Huh.
So I kind of thought, that's good. I kind of thought I would become like a banker or something in the business world like that. I actually was going to go to college for that. And I got the bill for college, and I said, I can't afford that much money. I decided I would try to not go to college, and I went to the Air Force. And when I enlisted in the Air Force, they had me take a test that tells you what you're good at and what you're bad at. And they said, you did good on the test, so you can choose pretty much anything. So
So I was supposed to go in, remember the car accident I told you about? I was supposed to go in about 2 weeks to 3 weeks after that car accident. Of course, I get in the car accident, and I was a year doing rehabilitation for my shoulder and for everything else, my ripped muscles in my stomach. So when I got back out of the hospital, I got cleared to go into the Air Force again. My recruiter told me that was probably the luckiest thing that could happen because we have a great job for you. You can become a satellite communications technician, which means you're going to learn a lot of stuff. You're going to be really employable. You have almost enough stuff to get a college degree out of it. So that's great. But I don't know anything about electronics. He said, it doesn't matter. They'll teach you all you need to know. Said, okay, but I know nothing about it. So I learned all that, and I've been doing maintenance and stuff like that on electronics and hydraulics and robotics and all that ever since then. And when I was a kid, I never thought I would be doing this stuff. But I enjoy doing it, so.
Have you ever made, like, a giant robotic arm that picks up things?
I don't really make them, but we have. So I work in semiconductors, so I work on tools that make the chips that go into phones and computers and stuff like that. So all that stuff is done in a vacuum. They take all the air out of the chamber thing that it goes into.
So that there's no, like, air that messes the entire thing up?
No air, because they're going to put in gases because they want to etch away things, so they have to know what gases are in there. Well, if you have atmosphere, that's going to have nitrogen and oxygen, helium, all kinds of gases they don't want in there, so they pump it out. But they got to be able to move away for them. So, of course, you can't put an arm or anything in it because it's a vacuum. So they have robots that move wafers. So they're not like robots walking around.
Well,
so
they're
it's like an arm that'll just turn, and then a pin will come up and pick the wafer up, and the arm will go away, and then the wafer will get put down where it needs to go. So that's the kind of robots I work on.
There's also some special ones, some special tanks that you put your hand in and it's gloves.
Yeah.
Good. You're not getting affected by that.
Right. Well, these ones. So a vacuum chamber is pretty tough to keep a perfect vacuum to get all of the stuff out of it. So you got to have it pretty sealed. So those kind of gloves would crack after a while, and then they would leak. So we have all metal. It's all aluminum chambers. They got aluminum doors that close. They'll open up. The robot will stick a wafer in. The robot comes out. The door closes, and it starts its process. And then it takes it back out whenever it's done. So it's still fun stuff. We're making stuff that's so small you can't see it, which boggles my mind that we can do that.
So using a giant finger won't really work.
Not so good on that. It works on some of the chemical stuff, but not in the vacuum.
Have you ever, like, made hydraulics? Like, special things that work with hydraulics?
Made them, but I work on some that work with hydraulics. Some chambers that need to be picked up that are really heavy, they'll do a hydraulic lift for it. So I have to work on fixing them when they break. It's mostly my job. I don't design this stuff, but I mostly repair it and install it and optimize it and make it work better.
Do you know what hydraulic fluid is made out of?
Depends. There's a lot of different kinds, but I know it's all usually pretty, it's like an acid, so it's pretty toxic usually. You don't want to get your hands in it most of the time, but we don't do an awful lot with that. Most of ours are called pneumatics. They use air instead, air pressure instead of liquid pressure.
And however, air pressure might be lighter,
right.
It's weaker, so if there's a tiny crack...
Yeah, if you
got to
lift something heavy, you want a pneumatic or hydraulics. Yeah. Air's a little dangerous, too, because it's really high pressure, so when it breaks open.
You can go.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, like, imagine that, like, you make a jetpack, and then there's air pressure on
it. Something like that.
And then, like, and it's, like, for the military, and a military person's flying, and they get shot, and it, like, breaks with metal, and you're going
to
go.
I guess that would probably happen, yeah. Yep.
And be whistling, and you're just like, ah! And then, like, you're just, like, trying to, like, Skype people from a distance, and, like, somebody Skypes your nose to the end of the
tank and send you flying off somewhere else.
Uh-huh. So, like, he just goes, like, right before you're about to shoot somebody.
I said I was lucky in the military. I never had anybody shoot at me.
Well, seeing how you...
What's that?
Seeing how you're in a completely different thing.
Yep. We had people around us to protect us from that because our equipment was pretty expensive. So, pretty expensive and pretty important. They didn't want that to get broken. So they would give us guns. They would give us M16s and say, here, you can defend yourself if somebody comes at you. We said, well, there's Army Rangers out there around us. There's Marines around them that are protecting us. Pretty sure if they get past those guys, I don't know how to use a gun nearly as good as those guys do. So we're probably in trouble at that point. But it never happens.
Well, if you're smart, then you're just going to be tied. When they walk in, you can, like, shoot at them while they're walking.
Yep, they taught us all the stuff on how to do it, but we said, I hope that never happens, because if they get to us, they're pretty good. I'm not sure we're going to be able to stop them, so.
Like,
but they never did, so.
If they go in a straight line, just attack one spot and shoot everybody around for a distance.
Right.
And you just keep a line of people, like, just shooting them that they're going to get in with not a lot of casualties.
Yep.
So if they have a big enough...
Yeah, you do a lot of training when you're in the military and how to stop people. But again, thankfully, I never had to do that because I don't know if I'd want to shoot somebody. Well, actually, I kind of know I wouldn't. It'd be tough. Even if they're your enemy, it's still another person, right?
It'd be a lot easier if somebody just need to, like, a taser gun.
Right. So we can knock them out instead. That's a good idea.
So, like, you don't have casualties. You'll have probably...
Headaches, yeah.
You'll get headaches, and if worse, you're going to get a skin from, like, a sharp part on the gun.
Right. Yep.
What traditions have been passed down in your family?
So there's one tradition that I'm still doing. I mean, there's probably others too that I don't even think about. But there's one that we do, and that's on Christmas Eve. We always get to pick one present for each of us from under the tree, and you get to open that one present the day before Christmas. So, and my kids really like that tradition still. So they're always kind of going through and picking up, just like I did when I was a kid, you're shaking it, and you're trying to figure out, okay, which one's the best one?
No idea. If we were allowed to do that, I'd pick the biggest one.
I went with that a lot of times, and then a couple of years in a row, I got some little things that were just really cool, and I got some bigger things that were okay, but you said, man, I wish I'd put that one the night before, but I guess it's the next day anyway, so it's not the end of the world.
So what we kind of do that, but ours is we have a Christmas Eve present, like a specific one.
Okay.
And
this is the one you're allowed to open Christmas Eve.
Yeah, and it's BJ's.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes our dad's great, and he buys us these little little Lego sets.
Right.
That are like $4.
Yep.
Since he's going to buy us like a $20 set for Christmas Eve. And we just build those. Now, dad...
So he puts them in with the same presents you can have on Christmas Eve, or...
Well, no, he gives it to us
on
Christmas Eve.
Right.
And that only happens sometimes, but when it does, it's great.
Yeah, because Legos are fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what's even better is because of this thing, I get presents on my birthday, then I get a day off on Christmas Eve, and then Christmas.
That's right, you were born right before Christmas, right?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm more like, yeah, cool, I got a phone or something for my birthday. I've never gotten a phone in my life.
Right.
Like, hey, look, cool, we got this cool game system for my birthday. I have a day to enjoy that before getting something new.
Right.
Then I get peaches, I'm like, awesome, I get to sleep with these. And then the next day, I get all that
presents.
Stuff.
So, you know, it's going to be tough for your parents, because Michelle, my wife, was born on January 8th. So we have Christmas on the 25th, and then you go 2 weeks later or so, it's her birthday. And then she and I got married on January 15th. So a week after her birthday, it's our anniversary. So I'm always trying to come up with enough presents to make sure I get what she needs for those three different events. So I can feel your parents' pain. Finding all those presents all at one time can be hard.
Well, the thing is, since my birthday's so darn close to Christmas, I get, like, two presents, and you're like, okay. And if it's a nice present, Mom, that would say it's for your birthday and Christmas.
Yeah, I've seen some of those, yeah. Because you only have so much money, right? You only buy so many presents.
Well, this last year I went to Colorado.
Yep.
And either I was going to get $100, which would have been great, but I didn't. And thinking about that would have been the worst option because
right.
I got a birthday and Christmas gift and from my grandparents, and they got me the same size as the movie, BB-8, controllable with that, like, you could talk to it and it would do stuff.
Right. Well, that's awesome.
So it was way better than just a bunch of cash.
Yep. Cash is nice, but it's always nice to get a present. It's kind of what people were thinking about you, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
But this year is going to be really easy. I want one thing and one thing only.
Oh, yeah?
Phone.
Okay.
I got her phone at 13.
Right.
So if I get a phone at 13, I'm going to be so happy because then I could get in the loop of the missionary talking.
Yep.
But that's going to be over. And so I just want the group chats, actually.
So when you get your phone, just don't forget, the world outside's a lot of fun. So don't get stuck in that phone too much. Phones are fun. Outside's fun, too.
If it was up to you, what would be more fun? Like a video, like a board game with your family, or going hiking with your family?
Oh, that's a tough one, because they're both kind of fun. I guess it depends on how tired I was. If I'm really tired, maybe a board game because you can sit down a little bit. But if I'm not tired, I always love to get out in the woods, go take a canoe out and go canoe somewhere, something like that.
Yeah, if we lived next to a lake, then that would be awesome.
That would be fun, wouldn't it? Yeah. I always love to go camping by a lake and go out on the lake whenever you feel like it. It's pretty fun.
How many times did you go camping on that lake?
So there's one up north, so we'll go camping. Usually we do it two or three times, maybe four times during the summer. We haven't done it yet this year because I've been working on the truck to make it work to get up there. But there's one up there called Russell Pond. So it's not really big, but it's a really nice clear water pond. And it's big for a pond. It's just not really a lake size, but it's up in the mountains. So it's really fun. We like going there a lot. We've been going there for 17 or 18 years now.
My grandparents, my different grandparents, let's give me the BBA. My other grandparents live in Nashua, and they have a giant, and they have a lake house.
Okay.
And it's great.
Yeah.
You know, we get to go a lot in the summer.
Yep.
And sometimes in the school year.
Right.
And one time we even went for ice fishing.
Right.
Fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Lakes are fun. What time is it? Are people peeking in? Oh, we got time.
Where are we on my watch? This? Oh, sorry. That's me. So that's all the questions.
Okay, cool. That was a good interview, Julie. Did a good job.